How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. Coming up on today's show, something a little bit different. I'm going to bring you my conversation with my friend Mike Socio, as well as some more thoughts on John Jones and Tom Aspinall, Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, among many other topics in the world of combat sports. No time to waste, guys and girls. Let's dive in. John Jones, UFC, Tom Aspinall, Alex Pereira. How would you guys play this? If you were to lay out the different possible integers of how this could be played, right? And you're limited to the confines of your own creativity. That's what makes negotiations so hard. When you get somebody that isn't overly creative, they can't plan ahead of time. Sorry, well, if he does this and I'll do this, right? When you start looking at chess and you start really pulling yourself back and all of a sudden you're playing 3D chess, I'm just wondering, if we're just a few people talking, what are the possible different ways this could unfold? Because Tom Aspinall not being stripped, I'm the only one talking about it. You guys as the audience have made it very clear you don't care. And there's sometimes it's hard for me to get the hint. When they took the belt off of Charles Oliveira, that was one of the most fascinating topics to me, which from a legal perspective, never got challenged. But I cared, and I kept bringing to you day after day after day what the problems, if that had been challenged, could possibly bring. And I finally had to take it from you. Jail, move on. We don't care. I'm getting that way, just so you understand. I am understanding that you don't care if Tom is interim champion or not. But the reason I care, while we fiercely adhere to the rules that we make up on the spot, particularly as it has to do with interim status, you can't have both. Those aren't Chael's rules. That's not company rules. That's linguistics rules. You cannot have an undisputed champion in the presence of an interim champion. So if Tom is the interim champion, what, I ask you, is John? What did John just fight for? What belt did they put around his waist? The next time John fights, that belt is the one on the line. So what is that belt called? That does inlie a problem. You likely would say undisputed. You likely would. I would stand up before the court and I would read the definition of undisputed for you and you'd realize that's not possible. But they didn't strip Tom. Now, that could mean a couple of things. Okay? That could mean that we are going to adhere to the rule, which is the healthy interim champion fights a healthy undisputed champion. An interim title, at a minimum, is a number one contender's card. Okay, I hear you on that, and I do feel that that would still hold. And in case you wanted to go back to Madison Square Garden and just say, well, how can Tom be there as John's fighting? There actually is a reasonable answer, which is John and Stipe were signed. There was an injury. We always show grace to injured fighters. So in the meanwhile, the interim champion came, and that's where Tom's at. But we took the bout that we were going to do what was showing grace, and we still just carried on with our plans. It just so happens we also have an interim title to have to worry about. Okay, great. But I can't help but feel maybe that isn't the only reason. I mean, we did not strip Tom, which has to be done. It's not a nice guy. There's not heart or concern with it. You can't have an interim while you have an undisputed. So let's go ahead and unify him, right? Okay. That's where the problem is. That's where we're at right now. The negotiation to get that done is wherein lies the problem. Now, if Tom had in fact been stripped, The UFC does not like vacant titles. I don't know if there's number and data financially that could support that. I can just tell you, policy-wise, they do not like vacant titles. So if you can't come to terms with John, no problem. Because we've already got our guy. And we elevate that to undisputed. I get where that would have been the plan all along. And that plan even would have been enacted had John not come back. When he come back, interim doesn't exist, except in this case, it does. So as you're looking at that, do you keep the belt on Tom as a way of saying, all right, we've got our match. We cannot go to number three or number four, which we do all the time. We can't move down. We have to go to our interim champion. Let's get you guys together and off we go. Is that what it is? Or does it take a little bit of power away from John? I mean, in all fairness, when you have an undisputed champion, John can't go to somebody else. You go, well, hey, there's other great fights and this guy's really good. He just can't. We can't skip that guy. So what's your school of thought as to why they did it? Now, let's say that you're John. And John's at two options right now. Fight Tom. Don't fight. Those are the two options. Now, generally, there would be three. For every other champion in our organization right now, as a matter of fact, they have three. Don't fight. Fight who you're being asked to fight. Create another fight. And that ability has been taken from Jones. Jones will not be in there opposite anybody except for Tom. And he could choose to not fight. But you see the unlikelihood of that. Now, if that statement that I just made is completely true, why did I bother making it? Well, because it's not completely true. John could always go back to 205 pounds. That's the dark horse that people aren't discussing. They boxed John in, or what John felt was boxed in at one point. And John did the one thing they said he'll never do, which is took the belt off and walked away from it. No one saw that coming. He did it. It's not a matter of would John do that. John's already done that. So it has to be a consideration. I mean, if the Piera army really spoke up, and I've noticed lately they're not. But I don't know how badly Pierre wants to fight Uncle Ayev. I mean, not for nothing. I just know that it brings in the kind of attention that Pierre has enjoyed and would like to have. In fact, if you could sign on to fight Uncle Ayev, or you could entice John Jones to come down and do that fight, I think that Pierre would be more in line for that, I'm guessing. But what do you do if you're the UFC? If you're the UFC, what plays could you make? I had an incredible thought brought to me. I had this incredible thought right after Marcus Lewis said it to me. Marcus said, this whole Francis business, this whole cross promotion, Marcus said, do it, but do it with Tom. Send Tom, give Tom the carve out. Let Tom go fight Francis. A one-off, he comes right back, win or lose, he comes right back, it's a one-off. That's very interesting. That's a very interesting thing to do. The unlikeliness of it, I get, is flashing and blinking in your eyes. But you guys understand oil? Do any of you ever try to make money in oil? Oh, the barge got shut off and we're going to have low amounts of oil. Now, oil is what's called a futures market. So if you want the price of oil to sink overnight, you can do that without a drop of oil. You can just put out a press release that you're going to release 1 billion barrels from your reserve. It's a futures market. Whatever's going on now, it's in the future. And in theory, at least, if you flooded 1 billion barrels of oil into the market, it is going to sink the price because you have supply and demand. You don't actually have to open a spigot. And the day that you do, that doesn't drop oil prices. It's the day you give the world the perception of more oil. And I'm only sharing for you, like you wouldn't actually have to give Tom. You would just have to creatively release to the media that you're considering giving Tom. And the world does change pretty quick. John Jones hasn't hit anything. John's been very transparent with you guys to say this is about money. He was very open with you guys at 205 pounds. He called his bluff and told him, no, you won't do any of those things. And he spent 3 years and he did them. And he did them somewhat effectively. Like when John came back, it's when everyone kind of realized, hey, we're glad John's back. So, I mean, on any bluff, right, you got to be ready. You got to be ready if the guy calls it. John got called, and he sat without a paycheck for 3 years, and his skills somehow got better. I mean, he's having easier fights now, right up a weight class. And I'm only sharing for you, like, when John bluffs and says he'll walk, you can't rule that out. And there isn't many other opponents that are that interesting. And the way John is paid through participation, there is no fight like Aspinall. John's gone as far as to say he believes that will be the biggest heavyweight fight of all time. I think he's right. But you can't front load those things. You can't guarantee it. It's got to be a cut of the business. I'll give you a great example. But what was supposed to be the biggest fight of all time and would have been the biggest fight of all time, what should have been the biggest fight of all time, and everybody did everything they were supposed to do except for the players, Francis Ngannou, Cyril Young, gone. If you were to go back in time, Francis Ngannou, Cyril gone, undisputed champion, interim champion, former teammates, head coach chose one, he rolled with gone. Like, if you were to tell that story, there has never been a bigger or better story, but the numbers sucked. There's bad numbers, guys. If the numbers were bad, I'd say bad. It's a whole other level. But the one unforeseen was what a terrible job those two guys, Gon and Francis, when you're sitting down and you're doing the math on this and you're giving projections for the night, the one unforeseen is what a terrible job those two guys were going to do. They were incentivized to do a great job. So you just assume. And I have to tell you, while I do think that John's right, I think John and Tom, in any reasonable walk of life, John doing what he's been doing pretty well lately, Tom doing what he's been doing pretty well lately. But if you remove Tom from that equation, the one that gets hurt is John. The way John's contract has worked, the one that gets hurt is John. If you remove John from the equation, the way Tom's contract works, it doesn't get hurt. As a matter of fact, he's likely in for his biggest payday, which is also what a fight against Jones would represent, but just in more. So the mere speculation that you were going to give a carve-out to your heavyweight champion, that champion, that mere speculation would change the attitudes and go, hey, wait a minute, I need that guy. Anyone else on this roster but that guy cost me millions with an S, millions of dollars. As of right now, it's looked at and said, well, there's nowhere for him to go. Nowhere for me to go, nowhere for him to go. But that isn't totally true, is it? Headline alone, carve out, Aspinall versus Francis. We're just folks talking. But it's pretty interesting, isn't it? Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson. Very interesting. Psychologically, it's very interesting. Some of those outcomes, you got a childhood on the line for someone like me. You have nostalgia on the line for someone like me. You have a hope of taking the world back, which particularly in sports belongs to 18 to 25 year olds. Like, that is what that was about. It broke attendance records. It broke viewership records. Very few people, broad stroke, very few people cared about lefts and right hands from either guy. This was emotional. There was a lot that was riding on it. And Jake, like so many times, gets put in such a hard spot where people will criticize him for not knocking out Mike Tyson. And the reason that's a hard spot is for the people that would have criticized him had he knocked out Mike Tyson. When you got two doors you can walk through and neither one of them is positive, it's a really hard spot. I don't know of a time that I have ever witnessed a fighter allow another fighter to survive. I know that commentary is out there everywhere. Boxing has such a hard time emotionally accepting Conor McGregor, who had never done the sport, go 30 minutes with the best to have ever done the sport. Like, boxing couldn't accept it to the point that they did it. They told anybody that would listen, Floyd carried him. And there was not one ounce of truth to that. I mean, not one ounce of truth to that. Floyd did not carry him around. Floyd did not carry him a shot, a combination, a second. It did not happen. But that was a lot easier to accept than the best we've ever produced needed 30 minutes to get rid of a guy who's never done it. Even amateur Conor had never done it. And it was tough. The very first thing boxing tried to do was lean on size. Floyd wasn't big enough. Conor had cut down. Then they tried to lean on southpaw. And then they finally just got to Floyd carried him. And the moment that Floyd finished him was 3 seconds after Floyd decided to no longer carry him. As human beings, people will always believe what they want. Like, when one outcome gives you what you want to be true, people will take it. Now, I'm sharing that because it plays out in sport. So while I have never seen anybody carry another guy, I've never seen anybody let a guy survive. I can't say that anymore. Jake did let Mike survive for 2 rounds, partway through the 7th round, and for all of the 8th. But it didn't impact the outcome at all. But it's being called into question. It was very clear that Jake allowed Mike to survive. Jake then did a press conference at the end while trying to preserve sportsmanship, while trying to be polite and to serve his fallen opponent. Jake did let it be known that towards the end, he did in fact look for the bell as opposed to the KO. And there's discussions of a lawsuit about this. People are upset about that. And I would just try to look to precedents. I don't see any other sport where that happens. In fact, let me take you back to the Olympic Games of 2021. So that would be the Tokyo Olympics. Soccer team from the U.S. won a game 7-1. And the soccer community was so outraged, they called for that head coach to be fired. And that head coach, this was women's soccer, she had to take to the dais and say, this is a game that's outcome is based on score discrepancy. Meaning I should never have to apologize for scoring points. That's what we're doing. And soccer pushed back. Soccer said, no, you had enough points. You've only got to win by one. When you were ahead by 4, you could have put the brakes on. You could have put in your B team. But instead, you went ahead by 5. By 6, by 7, you could have started playing Pat. You shouldn't have scored. I was stunned to hear it. I thought that was gross. I think that is so disrespectful, but the community of soccer disagrees with me. In football, it is terrible sportsmanship. On all levels of football, I don't care if you're playing in 5th grade, you get into high school, you get into college, to run a score up. You, the head coach, will be looked at by that community in a very negative light. And I could never make it as a football coach. I could never make it because I can't get around 2 concepts. First off is the way those football players walk onto the field. You will never see a great Mayweather, Serena, Colby, Manning. You will never see a great using their energy when the clock isn't running. So I just would fit. When they break through that, get burned, the cheerleader and the band is going, they make them that paper thing and they bust through and they're screaming, they're jumping up and down. The greats don't participate in that. Tom Brady does not run through that thing screaming up and down. Tom Brady walks onto the field and he saves that energy until the clock is running. That would be the first reason why I couldn't make it as a football coach. But the second reason is the problem with running up the score. The fact that they resist that they're killing time. You've got an audience here to watch this game. You're getting guys that are running into each other as hard as they possibly can. Like, the tackles don't lessen, but the scores are supposed to. And I'm just sharing with you, I could not make it in that. That is disrespectful, in my opinion. I grew up under the school of thought of Coach Roy Pittman. And Roy Pittman would stop a match. This is wrestling. He had a towel on his shoulders at all times. You never saw him at an event. And he came to an event every Saturday where he didn't have a towel. He would use that towel and throw it in and stop a match. And the other guy would win. Coach Pittman would stop the match against his own athlete and force them to forfeit the match. And he used that towel for one reason only. If his guy was ever trying to make the opponent look bad. In wrestling, let's say you take a guy down and you put him on his back. If you were to let him off his back, to avoid pinning him, to let him off his back, say you're to take him down, they call it cut him, let him go. So you can take him down again and you cut him and let him go. And then you take him down again. You're now playing with him. You're making him look bad. And Coach Pittman would stop the match. You could be ahead by 8 points and there'd be 5 seconds left. He'd stop the match and give it to the other guy. If you're better than that guy, finish him. Don't play with him. I share that with you because to watch the pushback on Jake Paul for admitting that he looked for the bell as opposed to the KO. I don't know that I wouldn't jump on that bandwagon with you, but in what other walks of life do you maintain that same attitude? Are you one of the people that don't think a football game should go 108-6? Because it's rude and it's unsportsmanlike? You promised the people, you promised the other team you'd bring your team. You promised your own team. You can trust me when I call out plays. You're now going to call out plays that don't get the ball into the end zone out of sportsmanship? You think that was a kind thing to do? And it also comes down to stopping a fight. Well, I'm jumping around, guys. I want you to follow it. I want you to follow me because I would like a consistency with this. To give Jake a hard time and or to find some crooked lawyers that find three or more and do a class action lawsuit, which they will do. With what other sport do you carry that? Because our own head women's soccer coach had to go on NBC and apologize for doing her job, which was to score points. She had to apologize. Community was disgusted. So why is it when Jake Paul, who is not having a hand in the outcome, there was nothing that Jake did that had a hand in the outcome. He stayed true to himself. He just changed strategies. Instead of winning by knockout, there's another way to win, which is to touch him, move around, not get touched back. He switched strategies while still continuing with the integrity of winning the game. So what's the problem? Well, per the story I read today, one of the problems comes with the bettors who bet Jake to win by knockout. So they're mad at Jake. You could have knocked him out. Okay. There was nothing that I saw within that fight that makes that statement true. Just because Jake could have beat him up worse. How you quite got to knockout. A little bit of revisionist history. Jake's punches don't get better as the night goes on. Nobody's do. So if you don't knock the guy out in the first couple of rounds, you're pretty unlikely to knock him out. But I'll hear your point anyway. If he openly stopped trying something that looked like was coming, I would see where you'd be a little bit frustrated. But what about the guy in the football game that bet the spread? What about that guy? What about all the Super Bowls that we've watched and there's still time ticking down and they rush the field and they start their celebration? I mean, what is that referee doing, letting all these people on, but then it's their ball, it's their clock, they got the right to do it, but they just stop the sport? They don't try every second to score, to gain yards, to do better, they flick it in? Where's the lawsuits on that? I mean, I'm just asking. What do you do when you're that better and you bet the spread and they have an opportunity to kick a field goal and they elect to just run out the clock anyway? All they had to do was kick that damn goal. You make $10,000 and they're right there. They're in position. Everything that you bet on, everything that you risked your money, it's right here. And they elect to not do it because nobody has a problem with that. Nobody. And somewhere Jake was supposed to try the entire time to knock out Mike, according to you. Now, Jake does have to try the entire time to win. He can't ever go back on that. But he's got to hurt a guy, and I'm more wondering, why are you coming to Jake and not the cornerman of Mike Tyson? If you, the audience, are so sure and it was so clear that unprecedentedly you're going to file a lawsuit that he didn't knock a man out, of which you know nothing about. You've never knocked anyone out. You've never been knocked out. You don't actually know a lot about separating a human from consciousness, but you have decided, and you have Jake's interview as your proof. If the fight was that obvious, why didn't the coroner stop it? And that I would like an answer to. That I really would. There is a general belief, and we're as guilty in MMA as they are in boxing, that you stop the fight when your fighter can no longer continue. There's not a corner man out there that would disagree with that. You stop the fight when your fighter can no longer continue. You should stop the fight the moment your fighter can no longer win. I have stopped fights before from the corner. I don't owe anybody an explanation. And if the athlete has a problem with that, fair enough. Don't put me in your corner. But the moment that I realize we are not going to win this fight, whether you're lacking the power, you're lacking the skill, you're doing the damage, the clock's got too much on it, get him out of there. Now, nobody's going to agree with me on that. Nobody. No commission anywhere is going to sanction or do anything to anybody for that. I'm sharing with you my opinion. You don't stop the fight when your guy can no longer win. I apologize, can no longer go on. You stop it when he can no longer win. Mike Tyson could not win. Now, Mike Tyson started playing a different game. Mike Tyson switched partway through that match to survive. Did a very good job with that. Mike does deserve credit. Conditioning is always a problem. He deserves credit. He kept his hands up. He kept his chin down. He was trying to maintain movement. There was a lot of things that Mike did very well. There were some problems. There was a speed problem of just simply getting to the target. Okay. So who's at fault? And if you start arguing who's at fault and where the fault is and the blame is, you start to realize nobody. Everybody did what they were supposed to do. Mike himself did the best that he could do for the situation that he was in. And Mike's trainers from the side could see he still got his hands up. He's still rolling or blocking to the best of his abilities. So the trainers aren't guilty for not stopping it. Jake doesn't know how much energy he has left or how many punches he can throw. And whether he chooses to not knock Mike out or he chooses, that's just not the best strategy at this point. I have enough wins in the rounds. From this point moving forward, including this very round, of which I'm winning, I don't need to switch and win by a decisive knockout. I need to just win. For Jake to change his strategy in a match, that is perfectly normal. And in so many other games where you will pull players off the field, put lesser players in, and start calling plays that do not advance the ball towards the bucket, and people accept that. It's very strange. And if you want to know who's at fault in Paul Tyson, the answer is nobody. Ever start your day feeling like you're dragging your feet before you even step out of bed? Most cream powders taste like lawn clippings and barely give you the boost that you need, but not Morning Man Greens. Morning Man Greens is the ultimate morning fuel. It's packed with 95 milligrams of clean caffeine from green tea and coffee bean extracts, plus over 75 vitamins, superfoods, probiotics, and digestive enzymes to power you up and to improve gut health. And if caffeine isn't your style, don't worry. It's available in decaf too, so you can choose how you start your day. Unlike those other green powders, Morning Man Greens actually tastes amazing. It's got rave reviews from thousands of satisfied customers who have ditched their old routines for this game changer. I personally felt the difference right away, and I'm talking about on my first try. It stopped me from having sluggish starts, no awful aftertaste, and no energy crashes. It's just pure sustained energy all day long. I want to tell you about something, because this is only going to be for a limited time. Morning Man Greens is offering my listeners an exclusive 20% discount. Just head over to morningman.com/chale. Use the promo code CHALE20 at checkout. That's morningman.com/chale. When you get to checkout, make sure you use the code CHALE20. That's going to get me a little bit of credit, and that's going to get you a 20% savings. I want you to start dominating your mornings with Morning Man Greens.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
By the way, buddy, did you happen to catch the last fight night, this Peter Yan fight?
Yes.
Okay. Is it me or are the sometimes the fight night smaller events just delivering even sometimes better than the big ones?
It's for like sure.
That was a really good main card.
For sure. Absolutely. And that's always been the surprise, even though it's the history of the sport. Just for example, the one that kicked us all off, Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin, Wednesday night, some network, I think called Spike. Nobody was really watching, but Dana has made that argument. Like, guys, I know you get excited when I bring you these big names, but I got to get those names from somewhere. This is what Fight Night is. It's the same guys before you know them. Just trust me. And it's true. I mean, Yan versus Figgy, you got a world champion from 125 against a world champion from 135. That's as close to a super fight as you can possibly get. Even if they don't have the belts right now, it's champion versus champion for free and up to 25 minutes. Yes, it turned out to be very pleasing to watch.
Pleasing to watch the Tabitha Ricci fight. Shannon, I'm going to mess up her name, but the Chinese fighter that she fought, boy, is that girl tough. And Tabitha Ricci just couldn't get inside, the reach situation, but an excellent fight. Carlos Ahlberg, Ozdemir. What a great fight. I mean, just a great fight. And then there was this underdog on the card that I'm not really familiar with her, but her name is Gabby Fernandes. And she fought a woman named Wang Kung, and she was the biggest underdog on the card. She was like, I want to say like plus 1300 or something. And she won. She stayed, she weathered the storm and knocked her out. It was beautiful. And then the Salikov guy who's 40 years old is losing the fight, gets a head kick and wins. I mean, it was just insane. A spinning wheel kick.
Sure.
What a night of fights. Bravo, UFC. I mean, they was on at a funky time, but it was so good to watch.
So, Sosh, coming out the back end of this, I guess you would say the night belonged to Yan because he was main event and he won, but he won in dominant fashion over a world champion. My question, though, is that enough, in your opinion, to get a title shot? Allegedly, Nurmagomedov was supposed to get the next title shot against Merab. Without any conversation, without anything being disclosed to us, the audience, about an illness or an injury, Nurmagomedov signs on to fight somebody else, by the way, on free TV. So now you're going, okay, obviously Nurmagomedov isn't the number one contender because he has this fight, but what happened? Did he pull out or did Merab pull out? Nobody has put out a press release saying that one of them was hurt and or injured. Sandhagen's got this huge fan base, just doesn't know how to get himself a title shot. Like, rhetorically, he doesn't know how to say the words, give me a title shot. Then you got O'Malley that was going to be gone for a year. And it turns out he's not going to be gone. He's already back in the gym training. So you've got all of these great options. Not to mention, you got Dominic Cruz and Henry Cejudo just floating around the division. There's so many great guys to choose from. we were led to believe it was going to be Nurmagomedov. But that argument from the company that, no, it's Nurmagomedov and nothing else, it loses weight when you already announced that he was offered and signed to fight somebody else that wasn't a title shot. And I'm just asking you, like, what do you got to do? What do you do if you're Marab? Marab has called out 20 different people, none of which are named Nurmagomedov. Like, he's made it pretty clear that's not the match that I want. But he's calling out hammers. He's not calling for easy fight. They're all killers. And I'm just wondering, what would you do at 135 for the title?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough question. I mean, look, at the end of the day, if I'm the UFC, and not speaking from a fan's perspective, but from a dollars and cents perspective, you got to go, look, Petr Yan, as great as he is he the most exciting fighter to watch? Is he on the tip of people's tongue? He doesn't speak English. I'm not putting him down for it. It's just a fact. And you get somebody like Sean O'Malley, who could possibly come back from hip surgery and be able to fight again, even though it's a rematch, 1,000,000%. The buzz, what is out there in the ether for the people to watch? You got to go with somebody exciting. I thought Umar was going to be the guy. I still don't understand. I'm with you. What happened? Like, there was Umar came from nowhere. I didn't even know who Umar was. I knew his last name and he's Dagestani, but he's like, His guy is tweeting for him, apparently. This just came out. I don't know if you saw it, but Ali Abdelaziz, I don't know his last name.
Ali Abdelaziz,
Abdelaziz. He put out a tweet forgetting that he was on Umar's page, thought he was on his own, and he said Umar would fight this guy in a minute and Umar would beat him. And then they caught him on it. He goes, yeah, lots of people speak in third person. But the point is, like, you know, it's like, I really think that he buzzed up Umar, where we got to the point where we said Umar, it was like on the tip of everybody's tongue. I just don't know that Jan has the ability to put asses in seats. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to turn the question onto you. How much, you're on the inside of the UFC and ESPN, how much does that weigh on the UFC's mind? Like, a charismatic champion gets taken down by somebody that isn't so charismatic. People say, sorry, I know we're friends with him, but people say Bilal Muhammad might not be the most likable or charismatic champion. How much does the UFC know that, deal with that, and talk about that in their Tuesday meetings?
Yeah, surprisingly little. Dana White made a brand promise way back in 2001, and his promise, how we're going to be different from boxing, and they were losing money left and right, and Dana would not come off of this promise, which is, over here, the best fight the best. That's it. We do not build, and that really doesn't work. I mean, at least in theory, Vince McMahon was interested in purchasing the UFC. And Vince was at the table, escrow money in hand, his own son Shane is shoving him and wants to do it. And Vince finally comes in and says no, and he offers the reason why. You cannot build a star if you can't control the outcome. And it made a lot of sense. This was 2012. The UFC was a great thing. It was my favorite sport, but it by no means is the business that it is today. Dana built stars without controlling the outcome. I mean, every single time Dana will risk it. We just saw it at the Sphere. Sean O'Malley, his biggest star, and he put him with Marab. Marab's doing a great job, but to act as though they can both move the needle, they can't. No. Dana's getting ready to do it with Alex Pereira. He's getting ready to sign and announce that Pereira will be taking on Ankalaev, which is an incredibly dangerous fight. In fact, for hypothetical fights, it's the only one that DraftKings favors to beat Pereira. But Dana he will not come off of that. Nobody gets protected. But if you come down to three guys and you're sitting down going, okay, it can be any one of these three, who gets the nod? That's where the mandate of the masses can come in. That's where you go, okay, let's do a little bit of it the audience's way. So you do get a piece of that, but it's small. I mean, it's really small, and many people would predict, boxing still doesn't agree. Boxing will still, there are certain managers, you give him $20,000, you give him $50,000, he'll get you to 20-0. And it's true. And the UFC just doesn't do that. I heard a boxing guy complain one time, and it's a compliment, but backhanded. And he said, the greatest thing Dana White's ever done, nobody's recognized. The greatest thing Dana's ever done is Dana made losing acceptable. In boxing, if you lose, don't talk about a title shot. If you lose five things, don't even think you're going to get back on TV. If you lose 10 fights, you're a bum. Meanwhile, Dana's found a way to get guys a lot and bring them right back into main events. Bring them right back. Now, it's only because everybody, iron on iron, everybody has hard fights. So the public does accept it. And I don't think it was a goal of Dana's. This is the way the boxing guy worded it. Dana White made losing acceptable. It's a very interesting philosophy. And I'm glad I overheard a conversation. I'm glad I heard him say that. And he's right.
That first of all makes a ton of sense. It sounds like Dana's thing, which is, I think you're right. It's like, let's put on the best fights in the yep. world with the best fighters and let the chips fall where they may. The superstars will rise, right? And but if they fall, like, yeah, I've never heard him say, oh gosh, like, you're right. The O'Malley thing is perfect. Yep. As great as Merab is, and he's got a personality, Merab, but he's not Sean O'Malley. And Sean O'Malley, if he had won that fight, he would have been in Connor land, right? And why risk it? Why risk it against a guy that could eat, I mean, obviously beat Sean, right? But it's like, he was a bad matchup. He's fast. He does cardio for days. He's going to pick you up and throw you down and all those things. I love that, man. I love that. I love that you're saying that. And that makes perfect sense. So the only time it would come into play is if there is like three people and all things being equal, they're going to probably go with the most charismatic. But if you're the best fighter and you have the best record, you're going in there, because putting on Goliath against, forget even the DraftKings thing, which is crazy that, that why Pereira would be an underdog, but nonetheless, and I know it's true. It's just not a great matchup to put your biggest superstar against a guy that could potentially, I don't think he's going to beat Pereira, but he could. He could absolutely. He's got the skill set to do it. Even though we haven't seen his wrestling lately, maybe he's holding all his wrestling stuff to fight Pereira, and he's just going to pick him up, throw him down, and try to beat him on the ground, which no one has done yet. So interesting. Wow.
There was an unpopular fighter. There was a guy that was pretty tough. His style wasn't perfectly what they're looking for, and he wasn't all that famous. And Dana let him have Connor just because he worked his way up to that level, and that unknown fighter was called Khabib Nurmagomedov. And he goes on to be the most famous Muslim athlete on the entire planet. But it was one of those things where you talk about cart and horse. Dana will switch them. Whatever that old adage, Dana will switch them. He'll let the popularity come later. If you're good enough and you can stand on those 2 feet, he'll shine you up nice, and then ultimately the public's going to decide. But the public usually gets it right. Their favorites are usually better than the other ones. So it's not a perfect science, but as far as bringing those matches and keeping your brand promise of the best versus the best, Dana's risked a lot, because some of his ideas should not have worked out. Some of them, you got merchandising in, you know how many t-shirts are sitting up there, and none of them are going to sell if the belt comes off this guy. I mean, that's kind of Vince McMahon's entire business model. That's how he knows how many t-shirts to order. And most guys do turn the gun. I mean, most guys will turn the gun. They want to do this, and they do everything right. And the second you put a belt around them, you can't get them to answer their phone. And now they don't want to do media anymore. And then they don't want to give somebody else a chance because it doesn't make sense. He hasn't earned it. All the stuff that they did to get there. Vince used to interview guys. Kevin Nash told a story. He was operating as Diesel in the WWF, and Vince had him over to the house on a Sunday. They sat out by the pool, and Vince said, I'm going to put the belt on you. I need to know when I do. Are you going to? And it was a checklist where Nash was now agreeing that, yes, I will do these things, because he wasn't quite a star. But Vince thought with the right push and the belt, if he does these things, he can get over. Generally, you got to get over to get the belt. Vince did it a little bit different on that one. And I'm just sharing, like, Dana does not have the benefit of that. He just has to match these guys up, and off you go. Dana unprotected Sean so much, who Dana personally likes. He unprotected him so much that he put him in there with Merab, and he made Nurmagomedov the number one contender before the fight even happened. Yep. Like, as good as Sean is, the likelihood to be able to get through Merab and Nurmagomedov are very limited. It didn't change Dana's behavior. So, you know, a lot of people say things as a brand promise. They don't follow through. Dana follows through.
Dana follows through. And look, he's winning. I mean, you know, Jones is the biggest star as ever. He lost Connor for all intents and purposes. He hasn't fought since whatever year. And we have the likes of Alex Pereira, right? We have a guy like that who, by the way, was just in Korea. I don't know if you caught it, but he was in Korea all dressed up, and he had these Korean fans and these people, mostly like businessmen, it looked like. And he walked down this long runway, and he stopped, and he had his guy next to him with the belt, and he stopped, and he did his, you know, his whole thing. Then he threw the punches in a suit and came up, and I'm like, nah, he's just too much, man. He's just too great of a champion. I never want to see that guy lose. I'm a geeked out Pereira fan. Geeked out.
And there is some interest. Nobody's really discussing it. John Jones and Tom Aspinall is going to happen. I get it. But
is going to happen, you said? Going or not going to?
It's going to. I mean, John has two choices. And a lot of times you have three. When you have three choices, which is don't fight, fight this guy, or bring a better idea that you can sell. When you're in that, you got a little bit of wiggle room. John's down to two. He can not fight at all, or he can fight Tom. But I'm just offering you for conversation. If John wanted, he, of course, could change the deck by going down to light heavyweight, a weight class that he could make, which would draw him right in to Piera. And nobody's discussing that, but I think it's a fun option. DraftKings came out with a line on that. They put John Jones as a 6.5-1 favorite over Piera. That seems a little lofty to me. But just for conversation's sake, I don't know that I necessarily buy into the idea that John does nothing or John does this. There is a third option when you weigh what John weighs, and then you can leave the weight class. I thought I'd just bring that up to you.
Interesting. And so they put those numbers based at 205, not Pereira going up, but Jones going down.
Pereira going up. For Pereira to go up, it was a heavyweight fight, but still 6-1 spread. Wow.
6-1? That's crazy. But John Jones, look, when you're an odds maker, you just have to look and say, well, it's never happened. He's never lost. If you don't count the whatever he did, 6-12-6, right, that he did against Matt Hamill. I believe that's what happened with his only quote unquote loss. You got to look and go, if it's never happened, if it's never rained in this city, and you say, I'll bet you $1 million it's not going to rain tomorrow, you're going to take the bet. You know what I mean? Because it has never rained. He has never lost. And as great as Pereira is, he's never fought the likes really of a John Jones. Yep. It's just, he's just, and especially John Jones of today, I think he's just more intelligent in there than ever. He's always been great. He's just that good. Yep. Speaking of that good, I'm watching this guy. Now, I don't know a lot about him. Okay, two guys that are in the UFC that are coming up, upcoming fights. First is this Kai Asakura, who's fighting Pantoja for the belt from out of nowhere. I mean, he was in another promotion, right? He's new to the UFC, but I watched his highlight reel, and I don't know that I've ever seen a fighter so slick in my life.
Yep.
I mean, is he as good as I think he is?
Yes. Yes, yes. Pantoja has an intangible, which is his gas tank. And we all know how valuable cardio can be. But if you watch the scrambling ability of Pantoja, you get a guy in one scramble, you will change the guy. You get in two of them over the course of the match, you're probably going to get fight of the night because they're so fun and so hard to do. You cause five scrambles, nobody can keep up. Pantoja has the ability to force a scramble, of which he wins, but now the other guy is tired. And as soon as that battery starts to fill up like a video game character, Pantoja puts him in another scramble. And he's just, people aren't quite seeing that yet. They're seeing, okay, he's got a black belt on the ground. He's pretty good on his feet. It's like, yeah, there's a third thing. His biggest weapon is that pace. I love the gentleman Sakura that you're bringing up, but it's intangible. I don't know. I don't know if Sakura can push that hard for 25 minutes. That's the one thing that Pantoja has been able to do. And that's the one thing you can't bring in a trainer. You can't bring in a coach. Like, actual DNA has a lot to do with your VO2 max. You've got it or you don't. And if you don't, if you're in the don't category, you're not going to go out and get it. No matter how hard you work or what diet you're on or how much you sleep, it really is what Pantoja does so well. If Pantoja can get out of the second round, get to the third and fourth, I mean, the odds of him winning any fight go up dramatically.
Yep. So Kai's got to catch him early. We've been known, Jail. I think anybody who's watched this knows that we have been known to pick fights, not so well. Right? So let's just say it for fun. I'm gonna go with Asakura just for fun. I don't even know much about the guy. I love Pantoja, but I'm gonna go with Asakura. You going with Pantoja?
I would go with Pantoja, yeah.
Okay, you're going. Now, let's go Shavkat. Here's another guy that I don't know a ton about. I see he's fought Wonder Boy, Jeff Neal, Magny. He's been through all the gatekeepers, sort of the division. And he's definitely badass. He's a lot like Asakura, right? He's kind of long. He's fast. He's fast twitch. He's all those things. Very slick. Who do you like? I mean, do you like Shavkat? I mean, Shavkat was supposed to fight Bilal, right?
Right.
And now Ian Machado Gary jumps in, okay, at 310 as a replacement. Machado Gary's great. Is he Shavkat great? And why?
I'm going to take their word for it. And the reason I say that is these were teammates. They worked out together every day. They've both been very polite. But according to Ian Gary, while maintaining his own ego, he did not win those rounds. And according to Shavkat, who would not weigh in on it because he wants to be a gentleman, he was the leader of the room. And the coaches and the partners that saw it, I mean, there's even different versions on the disparity within the gap. It was very meaningful for Rachmaninoff. And so then you come back to the old, well, you know, everybody's got a puncher's chance. And it's like, not really. I mean, one guy, Buster Douglas got a guy, and then George Foreman knocked out Michael Moore. Like, this whole puncher's chance isn't really all that true.
Right.
But Ian Gary has changed. He left the gym. I think Ian could at least take solace in this. I know what Rachmaninoff is. He's not any different. He's great, but he's the same great. I have left. I went to England. I went right now. He's in Brazil and training with Damian Maia, adding a lot to his ground game. He will, at a minimum, come in different and a little better. So if he can sell himself and convince himself on that, I think he could get some good minutes there. But from the guys that have seen them train, it would be a surprise, even a feather in the cap of Ian, if Ian won one of the scheduled five rounds. So I got to take these guys at their word. I got to go with Rachmaninoff.
Okay, I'm going Rachmaninoff as well.
You realize he has finished every opponent. I think he's at 18 of them. If I'm wrong, he's at 19.
18-0. He's 18-0.
It's unbelievable. With 18 finishes, that is folklore.
What the hell?
That is like Hicks and Gracie folklore that you hear about from a friend of a friend of a friend, but you don't actually have video, and there's nobody alive that actually saw it. It is unbelievable how good Rachmaninoff is. It's shocking, quite frankly.
It is. It really is. Gon versus Volkov. Gon won the first fight. They fought before. I believe it was unanimous decision. He won. Gon had not been knocked out by that point, you know, beaten by Jones handily. Volkov is sort of like a dark horse. I like Volkov. I think he's really great. He's really tall. I'm going with Volkov on this one.
And I think I think you're wise too. Every actor wants to be an athlete, and every athlete wants to be an actor. The difference here is Gon is handsome and talented enough to do both, and he just got back from a movie. He turned down opportunities. They even had a world title fight discussed, and he couldn't take it because he was gonna go do this movie instead. And I just bring to you, getting a rematch against Volkov with there's nothing on the line, not an interim champ, not a real championship, not even an upward contendership, it feels like a punishment, quite frankly. It feels like a way of sticking it to a guy who is under contract and decided he wanted to go into a different field. I'm going to take Volkov just for momentum. You don't get better at something by not doing it. I don't like that Gon had a layoff. There's my opinion. Good fight, hard fight, both kickboxers. And I think Volkov respects Gon's kickboxing. But now that Volkov has fought him in the rematch, the mask is off. And there's nothing to be scared of anymore. Now you know what you're getting into. And that will help Volkov over the hump.
Yeah, and he's not the boogeyman anymore. Gone, you know, he's had losses. He's, 100% Volkov. We're going with him. Some prelim fights are interesting. Dom Reyes and Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith, who I love. You know, I love Anthony Smith. He shows up. He's great. He's getting a little older, you know. And to me, Dom Reyes has all the ability in the world to have been one of the greatest of all time. He's just so awesome. There's something a little missing there. He's lost quite a lot of fights, but I think that's a Reyes win. As much as I love Anthony Smith, it's a Reyes win.
I have never seen John Jones lose a fight. And even if the official directory says that he didn't, Reyes beat him. That is the only time I've seen John Jones lose. Reyes won that fight. A very clear 3-2. And I've yet to have anybody dispute that with me.
Yeah.
But I'll share this. Anthony Smith. I was supposed to work with him a week ago. I'm in New York. He's in New York. He's up in his room. I'm down in mine. Looking forward to seeing it tomorrow. His coach died in his sleep. His jiu-jitsu coach passed in his sleep, 53 years old, incredible guy, been with Anthony from day one. This guy has a wife. He has two children at home. This story is as tough as it gets, and I bring it to you because that was 1 week ago. Anthony, as a way of serving the memory of his coach, is going to stay the course, and he's going to show up for this fight with Dominic Reyes. That is a lot for any man to bear. When you are in the locker room, you are looking for one person that can let you know you deserve it. And that's the person you trust. That person that's been there isn't going to be there, and that's tough. I will leave it at that. That's tough.
Yeah. Got it. 100,000,000%. By the way, I was looking up their records, just looking at, they have both fought a who's who. I mean, Reyes fought John Jones, Blachowicz, Jiří, Spann, right? Ryan Spann, who's just awesome. Anthony Smith, Roundtree, Dalidze. He beat Spann, Johnny Walker, Ankalaev. Yep. He has fought everybody. I mean, the man is just a stud on top of being a great commentator. And from what I can see from where I sit, a great guy.
Lionheart's the best. Lionheart would do anything for anybody. And that is a hard fight. I remember when he told me that opponent, I did feel something inside. I did feel like that's a bludgeoning. Like these two guys are going to go out and they're going to beat each other up. Yeah. And that's just the way the fight is. Anthony is so big. So many people have suggested to him in his career that he go down to 185. It's like, he can't, guys. He's too big. And then Reyes. Reyes should probably be a heavyweight as tall as, you know, yes. He goes about 6'4". He's beautiful. He got the big, strong shoulders. And
yes.
Interesting fight. Very, very hard match. And I do think the future is going to be pretty beautiful for one of them. And I think one of them is going to stumble. They cannot afford a loss here. Neither one of them. They're just at that age. They're just at that point in the career where the stakes start to get high.
Yep. You're so right. By the way, I saw a thing and I wanted to talk to you about it because I just wanted to hear you weigh in on this. What are your thoughts when these influencers show up and they want to fight or they want to spar with a UFC fighter? Yeah. You know, you have a guy like Sean Strickland who has historically gone great. He took a Navy SEAL and beat this man relentlessly. I mean, bro, it was uncomfortable to watch. I was like, dude, just all right, got it. And the guy's a Navy SEAL, so he's going to take it and he's going to thank him and he's going to shake his hand afterwards because the guy was a stud. But Sean does not ease up. And I just watched this guy Speed. I don't know who he is, but he's I'll tell you what, he can fight. He has no training, but the kid has absolute fast twitch muscles. He's in great shape. And he sparred with Dan Hooker. And Dan Hooker dropped him a couple times, but the kid stayed on his feet. They looked like they had 16-ounce gloves. But, I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, your day, did anyone ever just challenge you, some regular dude off the street, just said, hey, Jay, I want to fight you? I mean, does that happen? Did you ever get in there? Did you ever move around with a non-pro?
Funny you should ask that, because no, that did not happen to me. And that would be very insulting. The mere idea that an influencer, and he's going to own the rights, and he's going to video it, and he's going to edit how he wants, and you let him come in and do that. You wouldn't let Dana do that. You don't let Dana do that. Dana has to pay you to show up, and then Dana has to pay you when it's over, and there has to be an of the night bonus on the line. I mean, I'm just suggesting, why are you giving this guy free fights? I find that to be a little bit weird. And why would the guy think that he could come in and get a free fight? What is it about you that he doesn't respect? It's not just like these guaranteed clicks and views. I do find that a little bit strange. There was a guy that went and teased Rojas over the weekend. In fact, I thought that's a story you were going to tell. Yeah, Rojas is on a treadmill. And this guy comes up and tells him, beat it. You're on my treadmill. And stayed on him after that. I mean, he was pretty relentless on Rojas. And Rojas finally said, get it in the ring and I'll come see. Like Rojas decided, if it's in the ring, I can do it. I was at an event one time and these guys were heckling Randy. And they were really heckling and doing the catcalls to Randy's wife. But Randy figured, if I can get him in the ring, nothing will happen. Just get him to the, and Randy started baiting him back. I will take your challenge. All three of you, but get in the ring. I'll be right there. He couldn't get him in the ring. They stayed out of it. And Rojas did get this guy in the ring. There was a thing that happened and it was Matt Hughes. And I might change this just a little, but I think it was a DJ wanted Hughes to choke him. So Hughes puts on the choke. Now what the DJ didn't know, tapping is not natural. Tapping takes time to learn. Natural is to panic or go,
Yes. Yeah.
So he doesn't tap. Because he didn't tap, Matt doesn't let go. When Matt finally lets go, dude's unconscious, wakes up in time to call a lawyer and sue Matt Hughes. Matt did exactly what he was asked to do. But he was an expert and a professional, so he should have been the one to know not to. And that got settled. I don't know what happened there. But I always think of that story, and I always think, no, if you really wanted this and you want views, get into the UFC, like Randy said. Get in the ring. I'll see you there.
You know what? It's like your dumb kid is at the zoo, and you want him to have a better view of the, you know, the lion cage, and you put him over the fence, and the kid falls in. It's like, come on. Like, you know what I mean? Don't poke the bear. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, and these people, they love it. Look, Mike Tyson said one time, apparently, like, is before he went to prison, but he said he gets challenged to more fights than anybody. He goes, it's constant. People really want to take a shot at the title. I've been with Randy when people, I was with Randy in a road rage incident. I had I was like, dude, you relax, you know, and they didn't know who he was.
Sure.
They cut him off, finger, I was like, dude, you have no idea what you're doing right now. Just please. Yeah, no, not cute, man. Like, leave it alone. And these influencers, just leave it alone. And the ones that, like, there was a guy once, I don't know who he is, but he's the biggest dork in the world. I don't know. I'm going to find out this guy's name. He went to a Nate Diaz press conference and he filmed it all. And he said, hey, when you get knocked out, what are you going to, you know, and he just baited Nate Diaz. Like, what are you doing? And then he ran like a little biatch and, you know, got in his car and they filmed the whole thing and he's screaming at his security, you know, he almost caught me. What are you doing? I have to get the clip for you because you're going to hate this kid. But these influencers, it's like, no, No, no. You need to stand down, respect the sport, respect what these guys do. I think it's ugly, really
sure.
ugly.
It's a crime. It's a crime.
Yes.
It's not sanctioned. It's not. It's a tough spot, and they put the fighters in a very tough spot where the fighter thinks you're kidding, then they realize you're not. Now you've called his ego into question. It's one of these things that I would prefer they'd stop doing it, quite frankly. And there's even one where they're doing now, and Pierre was part of this as well, where they want you to hit him. So Pierre had these guys ask, and then another guy wanted to kick him, and then he's taunting him while he does. Like, the guy's got ability to take a punch. I don't really get it. It doesn't make him a tough guy. I just thought the whole thing was weird. I don't want somebody to ask me to hit him, and then it turns out I don't hit this guy hard enough because he's got a stomach of steel. It's weird. It makes me uncomfortable.
It's a lose-lose. It's a lose-lose. Yeah. There's people in the world that are fans that go, oh, why would he hit that poor man? Because they're not smart enough to know that it was supposed to be for fun. And the guy kept going, no, do it. I promise. And if you don't sign paperwork, you're going to wind up in a Matt Hughes situation. And that's a real, there are people out there that will bait a fighter to hit them and then sue. And they're out there right now. Stay away from it. Any great fighters, just stay away from that. The last thing I want to ask you about was this PFL. PFL buys Bellator, right? My question is, and I could be, again, I do not watch much of the PFL except to watch Randy do his thing, and he's great at it. He's the best part of it. I listen to how Dana speaks about the PFL, and I kind of agree with him. It's like, besides having, what's his name, Ngannou, like, what is the PFL? Are they there to build, in your opinion, to build their brand, to get bought out by the UFC and make a little bit of money? From what I understand, they're taking on debt and massive amounts of money. Now they're buying Bellator. Is Bellator worth buying? What is your take on these other promotions? Because to me, it is the UFC and nothing. And I don't work for the UFC, and I have no tie to the UFC, zero. But it's just, as a fan, they do it right. They do it great. And I'm a Dana White man. Period. I don't care. I'm a company man that doesn't work for the company, I guess. So call me what you want. But I don't know. I look at PFL and it's going, I don't love it. Am I wrong? Am I missing something? What is the value there?
And so nobody wants them to do better more than Dana, because Dana wants an opponent. Dana wants a fight. He just doesn't have a number one contender right now. Like, hey, guys, get stronger. Become a real threat to me so I can fire back and I can come at you. I got all sorts of tricks up my sleeve, but I can't even draw my weapon. PFL does so many things right. And we have a very fickle fan base. The fan base really, you got to prove yourself to the highest degree. We've brought announcers over from WWE. We brought commentators over from other networks that have done well and have fans, but our community doesn't want them in. Like, I remember Stephen A's first day on the job. We should have all stood back and go, wow, we got the biggest name in all of sport. And that is not what our community did. I mean, not for nothing. It's a very hard one to break into. Once you're in, you're protected. And I only share that with you is I don't know for sure what the PFL could do different. They do so many things right. The product is beautiful. They have fantastic athletes. And it's very hard to know what to do, right? I go get Ngannou for a whole bunch of money. And Ngannou can't sell a pay-per-view, but he doesn't even try to sell a pay-per-view. But can I get an opponent against him that can? And maybe I can fix it. And he's pretty good. And you start ending up in some of these tough spots. And right now, the hardest question I think anybody could answer is, what's Ngannou going to do next? Moreover, let me ask you, what do you want to see Ngannou do next? And I think that's where the problem lies. Like, there's just not an opponent. And he, Ngannou, taking all this money, should be able to look at the board and realize I've got to go build something. I owe these guys who are losing their ass on me. But he doesn't look at it like that. And he's not out there trying to help them. And he's not trying to get some kind of business going. PFL, when they say they'll do something, they do it. They say they'll have a show, they bring it. They say it's beautiful and we spend a bunch of money on production. They really have. But our fan base, that tipping point, they've always been tough to break into. We'll see. PFL, they do so many things, right? Mike Tyson comes to an event. They had a face-off one time. Yep. It was John Jones and Francis at a PFL event on their cameras. Like, there was so many great moments, but getting our audience to tune in can be tough.
It's just, I don't ever tune in. It's terrible. I really just don't tune in. I am part of this. It's like, I see the UFC. I'm a UFC fan, and there's nothing about, and Francis, and by the way, here's a great guy, right? I'm sure he's a wonderful dude, but like, I don't know. I think you're right. I think they spend a bunch of money. He doesn't work to do it. It's going to sound crazy. Every time I see Francis Ngannou, I swear he's complaining about something. I swear he's a victim about something.
Every time.
And I don't know. There's just something there. If he's not fighting John Jones, I don't really care anymore. There's just, I'm not into it. But if you're the PFL, you're the PFL right now, and they say, okay, you got a magic wand, PFL. What do you want? Clearly you want to get out of debt. What is the end game? Is it to build something that competes with the UFC? Is it to get bought out by the UFC? Isn't a lot of it have to do with we want to get bought by the UFC and acquired? Or is that not a thing? Is that
I don't know anymore that that's a very effective strategy. The UFC was doing a lot of that. Lorenzo Fertitta, it's hard to get an interview with, but when he does them, he will answer your question as straight as a person can talk. Lorenzo's been so straight before that people think he's swerving them. But he never does. Time goes by and you're like, hey, wait a minute. He told us all of that. One of the things that Lorenzo talks about is when they were looking at business models, they studied every franchise out there all the way up to the New York Yankees. But the one they went with was that of the WWE. And the WWE in Vince's early days, Vince went around, he was buying up territories. He wanted to put on events and shows, so he needed wrestlers. It was a great way to absorb contracts as well as get other things out of the marketplace. They got hit with a class action, and the class action was such garbage, but it got a little bit of waves with the courts that they said, hey, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not even going to give the perception that we don't have competition. And so, no, I don't think that that will ever happen. I don't think the PFL has that as their vision to sell. I think they wanted to compete alongside, ultimately break into the pay-per-view space, have a network such as ESPN buy up their distribution. I think they're just playing the long game. And I think they're doing a lot of things right. I think the one thing they underestimated is how do you break into this market? And I mean, I could tell you horror stories of commentators that were great, but nobody knew they were coming. And when they showed up and that wasn't the voice our audience was expecting.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. It got brutal. It got social media, but it got brutal for those folks.
It is tough to break in. Like you said, the Stephen A. Smith, if you're a sports fan, you love Stephen A. Smith. I mean, Stephen A. Smith is as good as it gets. He is as honest as it gets. He's interesting. The way he speaks, everything about the guy is fantastic. And you're right. He showed up and they were, who's this fool?
Yep.
Like even people who knew him were like, nah, screw Stephen A. It's like, wow, they will not let you in. They will not let you in. People like yourself, Cormier, you guys are knighted. You guys are knighted because you've been through the fire. Just speaking as a fan, it's like, yes, I know you know what you're talking about. And we keep it real in the UFC. UFC fans keep it real. We just don't mess around. And that Rogan's been there since day one or pretty close, and he gets a pass. John Anik is a guy that found his way in through pure charisma, in my opinion, and being great at what he does and being he reveres fighters and fighting, and we give him a pass. But beyond that, I don't even know that. To be honest, I don't even know that Laura Sanko's in the crowd yet. You know what I mean? And she's good. She's like a fighter. She's like a jiu-jitsu person. She knows all her tech stuff. But I think people are still like, nope. You know, that other guy, Brendan Fitzgerald, it's like, I don't know. UFC, you're right. It's like, you got to be, they want who they want, and they want them forever, and they don't want anything to change. God forbid when Dana ever, God forbid, leaves this sport. How does the UFC, honest to God, I think Dana, I've said this before, Dana's more important than any fighter in the history of the UFC times 10. He is the weight of 10 champions. People love him, and if he's not there, he's not part of it, I guarantee you the UFC is going to take a hit. And who would they ever get to replace him? That's an interesting concept. Dana, he's got to stay healthy because that dude is needed for the success of this brand.
100% true. I don't know if there's any leaders of company that are needed possibly more than him. The things that go on and that he's got his hand in, I mean, you are herding cats, right? And to get their respect and have them follow through on what they're going to do. Yeah. That's not just a job that anybody could get. There's no college you could go to and major in fight promotion. There's no library where you could check out a book on fight promotion. It is trial and error, and nobody has been tried more than him. You're right. It'll be a big loss when that day comes.
Yep. Him, guys, Elon Musk, I think, is another guy. I think Tesla stock just goes bye-bye. If he wasn't involved, you look at these people and you go, they are the brand. And Dana does it with a non-BS factor that's just as good as it gets. He keeps it real. And he does what you said today, which was like one of the smartest things. Like, Dana has made a brand promise and he has kept it. And that people respect. They don't need you to be super charismatic all the time, even though he is. They want you to tell them the truth and give it to them real. And that's what he does. doesn't. He is herding cats. He is the ringleader of our beloved UFC, and I'm a big fan, so I don't want him to go anywhere. Awesome. So we have some predictions. We'll see how we do, buddy. We'll catch up next time, and we'll talk before then, but we got some predictions. Let's see.
I had a blast with you, by the way. This was great. Catch up soon. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a reminder that if you'd like to support this program, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or submit a rating over at Spotify. I'm going to be back on Friday. But I hope you all have a great Thanksgiving with your families. Until Friday, everybody, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.